Welcome to the Victorious Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Arabella Hill, and today we're going to be talking about when your child negatively compares you. Has your child ever negatively compared you to another person, perhaps another mother, another father, another grandparent, for example? Well, if they have and it's hurt you, this podcast is for you. Let's get into it. A little while ago, when I was finishing up a chapter in my new book called Disciplining Without Damage for Every Age, there was one particular example from a lady I spoke to a few months ago whose preschool age daughter compared her in a negative way to another child's mother. She was particularly hurt and felt that her daughter didn't like her. She wondered, why did her daughter compare her like this? Doesn't she like her? Did she do it to purposely hurt her? And then her insecurity got the better of her and thought, is the other mother really better? Is there something fundamentally wrong with her as a mother? So on all these fronts, it really made her feel insecure and it hurt her feelings. The short answer to all of her questions was a sharp no. So at the previous stage of development, birth to three, kids have started to develop schemas. Schemas are mental maps of the world around them. They help them to make sense of objects and their relationships. For example, they learn a dog is fluffy, it barks and has a particular smell, acts in certain ways and poops outside. This is a schema. This is a mental map of the world. However, in the preschooler stage, they begin to learn that there is more to the world than what is at home, and there are other people like me. But wait, there are differences. Okay, so we're talking about really young children here, but also as children get older, they start to understand about the world in different ways. Childhood, when in terms of brain development, children don't start to really develop their prefrontal cortex, and it's not fully developed until at least age 25, scientists believe, and that's down to decision making and things like that. That's what that's responsible for. But understanding the emotions of others, understanding the world around them, is a constant, slowly unfolding mechanism within the brain. So young children are definitely not doing it to purposely hurt you. And I would beg to say that I don't believe that older children would do that to purposely hurt you. I mean, listen, in an argument with your teenager and they're like, Jimmy's mother is better than you because she lets him stay up till midnight. Now, that's a little different. We're talking just about normal comparisons here without fighting. So when they're younger, they learn that there are other mothers and those mothers are different, especially when they start to go to school and they realize, oh, hey, you know, there's other kids my age and she's a girl too and she looks like me and she has a mother and her mother looks like this, and they start to make sense of the world by using comparison. It's how we make sense of the world as adults too. We compare ourselves to other people, to the environment and to the world around us. It's not necessarily a bad thing. We use it as a yardstick, as like a measuring stick. Okay, so this is how I'm doing in comparison to my peers. This is how I'm trailing. It doesn't mean that we should go the other way and constantly compare ourselves negatively. Oh, this person's doing better than us, so therefore that means we are not good enough. That's when that kind of thing gets toxic. But comparison can be a healthy thing to help us stay on the right track of where we actually want to be in life. If we see people around us that are at certain levels financially, personally, where we want to be, having a look at the behaviors, at what they've done to get there by comparing is a good thing. But doing it in a way where it makes you feel insecure and you're comparing yourself and like, oh, I could never be like that. That's different. And that comes really from a fundamental faulty perception about yourself, if that's what's happening. So when children compare you, especially when they're younger, they're like, hey, you know, this mother does this, etc. They aren't doing it to hurt you because they don't have the full capacity to understand how their words and actions affect others emotionally yet. They are only learning what spitefulness is at that age when they're young. And by acting in spiteful ways, they can act out that growth, but they don't really understand it. That's why we've got to teach them. We've got to guide and correct them. They will do these things by default, but they don't understand it in a full way. They will act out, but not understand why they are doing it, why they are doing it, or how it affects others emotionally, even teenagers. You know, I remember when I was a teenager and I remember it clearly, and I would say things and I wouldn't fully understand how it would affect others emotionally on their deep level. Kids don't really start to really grasp that until they get older, you know, and it starts to become a slow unfolding understanding, because this is the way the brain is developing over time. When they're young, they only understand what they can see, hear, taste, smell, and touch. They don't understand that others have different needs than theirs. So we're talking about like the three-year-old range, the preschooler range. They don't understand that those needs are equally as valid and as important as theirs. And this is when we get into teenagehood. Teenagers are starting to slowly unfold and starting to understand that, hey, my parents have needs too, and those needs are equally valid and as important as my needs. So sometimes those needs cannot be seen. They are internal, and preschoolers don't understand what they can't see. So they don't understand the emotional world yet because it can't be seen and they can't explain it. They can't understand it. So if your young child has compared you to somebody else, they're not doing it to hurt you. They're doing it to form a schema, a mental map of the world. They haven't done it to be emotionally manipulative, because that takes forethought, that takes understanding, and that to do that takes experience. And they don't have that experience, forethought, or understanding to behave that way on that level yet. So there is more to this. And again, I explain all of this in depth in my new book, Disciplining Without Damage for Every Age. You can find that at www.disciplinewithoutdamage.com. That's disciplinewithoutdamage.com. So I give strategies on how to manage this as well. So in the meantime, if your 3 to 7 year old has begun to make comparisons and those comparisons seem negative, don't fret. They don't hate you. Just because your child may have noticed Mary's mom wears lipstick and you don't, or smells differently to you, or her dress is prettier than yours on that day, or they have a better car. Why does that family drive a better car than we? You know, they're not doing it to make you feel terrible. And I know it can make you feel terrible. I totally understand that. Is my son has done this, especially when he was younger as well. And they're not doing it to make you feel terrible. They're doing it to understand the world. They're doing it to form schemas and mental maps of the world. They don't hate you, or they're not trying to hurt you emotionally. They don't understand how to do that because they don't understand the world of emotions yet on that level. So even if they say, I wish Mary's mom was my mom. And I know my son has said that to me too when he was younger. And I hear a lot of kids say that. Even when I was a teacher, I heard lots of kids say things like that, you know, I like this teacher better because, you know, she had purple glasses or whatever it was, you know. I didn't take any of that personally. They're just comparing. They're just like stating the obvious. Children at that age are just so logical. They're not doing it as a spiteful act to hurt you. It means they are developing schemas and trying to understand how similar objects and people can also be different. Two moms, they're both moms, but they can be different. Two little girls of the same age, they are girls, but they can be different. One can be taller, one can be shorter. It doesn't mean one's better than the other. They are just different. So it pays to talk to them about these differences and help them develop these schemas, especially if they're younger, so they can make sense of the world. And I know it can hurt. And like I said, my son did this to me too when he was at that age. And it can hurt deeply, especially when you're tired and exhausted. And it triggers deep-rooted insecurities that we all have. Even I, we all have deep-rooted insecurities. And sometimes your kids just trigger it all on the same day. You know, but it pays to rein in those feelings, to become emotionally intelligent, to use your own self-regulation and understand why they did it and how you can help them so you don't slip into resentment. As I spoke to a woman last year who had slipped into resentment toward her child, and she actually told me in private, and I'm not going to reveal all her details, but in private, she told me she hated her child. She felt that she fundamentally hated her son, who was a young teenager at that time, but it had been festering for many, many years, even since he was really, really young. And when it really came down to it, and the core thing down to it is that when he was younger, he would say and do things that she took personally, and it formed a resentment, a little seed of resentment in her heart. And so because it hurt her personally and she felt that her son was saying these things and making comparisons and making just these blanket statements that can really seem harsh sometimes. Kids can be just brutal in their, you know, statements and honesty sometimes. She actually would punish him. And when we really talked about it, she didn't realize it at that time, but her behavior toward him changed. And what happens when your behavior changes toward your child recognizes it and they then change their behavior toward you. So if you start hardening your heart toward your child because you feel resentment toward them, your child is going to start hardening their heart toward you or avoiding you. And what happens is nothing gets repaired. The bond is shattered even more, and it gets to the point where, like, this woman had felt like she fundamentally hated her child, and then her child's behavior had gotten worse over time. Like, the things that she told me that he was doing, and he had been tested for ASD, ADHD, and all of that, and that was all ruled out. The things, and even oppositional defiant disorder, all of that had been had, all the tests, all of that was ruled out. And when we really talked about it, not just looked at the behavior, we looked at the roots and the root core of the behavior, it was that she formed a resentment against him from his behavior early on, and she had changed her behavior toward him. Instead of being more loving and open, instead of helping him to use comparison in a healthy way and not a negative way, she actually punished him, not hugging him so much, withholding affection, withholding love, little bits here and there, you know. It always starts off small and then it snowballs until he's a teenager and he doesn't want anything to do with her and he can't stand to be around her. And so then his behavior is negative towards her and she can't stand to be around him. So she pushes back. And when you have two opposing forces constantly pushing against each other, nothing is ever going to get better until someone stands up and decides to be a leader. Now, and this is what I told her. I told her she needs to stand up to stop this, to actually be a leader, to put her feelings and emotions in check. She needs to check them, because while her son may be deliberately now trying to push her buttons because he's had this resistance from her since he was younger and had built up over all these years, it still can be turned around. It still can be changed if the person who's in charge, the parent, stands up, checks their emotions at the door and decides that this is not how we're going to live. This is not how the narrative is going to go. This is not how my relationship with my child's going to end up. Because what he's going to do in a couple of years, he'll move out. And do you think they're going to have a better relationship because he's not living with her? Of course not. It's going to get worse. And that's when you have fractured families. So do not form resentment in your heart against your child, especially when they're younger, when they compare you to other people or they say hurtful things. They do not understand. They don't have the actual capacity in their brain, that part of their brain is so undeveloped, they don't know and fully understand on the level that you understand as an adult, that that statement, that comparison is said in that way can be emotionally hurtful to another person. They don't understand it. So let's go back to the woman, for example, if she had chance to go back, which none of us ever do, we can't overdo the past, redo the past. We can only learn from it and do better tomorrow. But let's say we could rewind the past and she could go back, and if she could have a do-over, this is what I would advise her to do. Number one, feel the feelings. Okay, my anxiety, my insecurity is triggered. I understand that my child at this development stage doesn't have the capacity to spitefully and emotionally hurt me on purpose because they don't understand it. So you go away, you may need to have a little cry if it comes out emotionally, yeah, privately in your room. You deal with your own emotions. Your emotions are not your child's responsibility to fix. Let me say that again. Your feelings and emotions are not your child's responsibility to fix. They are yours. They're not your husband's or your wife's or anybody's responsibility to fix. Your feelings of insecurity, of resentment, of hate, of joy, of love, or anger, whatever your feelings are, they are not anyone else's responsibility. They are your responsibility and yours alone. So it starts with being accountable to yourself and taking personal responsibility for your own feelings. Yes, your child said this. Yes, it triggered your insecurities. Be responsible for your own feelings. Acknowledge them. Write them down if you have to. Get them out of you. And then guide and direct your child into understanding how what they said and how they said it actually hurt you emotionally, and help them understand positive ways of making comparisons. I understand that you're trying to figure out why, you know, Mary's mom drives a Mercedes and we walk to school or whatever. And you can look at the difference and say, yes, there are differences. Yes, that looks amazing. I'm sure it's wonderful to have that car. I'm sure it's wonderful to do that. But there are benefits to what we have too. They are not better things than us. They are just different. Mary's mom was wearing a pretty dress today. I agree with you. Instead of feeling resentment, instead of feeling like, oh, you know, maybe I'm not as good as this other mom, you know, maybe she looks like a little bit more kept than me today. You know, instead of feeling that resentment or jealousy or insecure, you could acknowledge your child and say, I agree with you. She looks beautiful today. I loved her dress and I love the way her makeup looked. Hey, why? And if it's your daughter, hey, why don't we get together? Do you want to have a dress up party on the weekend? How fun. If I had a daughter, I tell you, that's what I'd be doing. And I don't. I have a son, so we did, you know, WWE wrestling in the living room and Legos and things like that. So you can turn it around, and then that helps you deal with your feelings of it. And it actually helps you bond to your child a little bit better as well. Because if you slip into resentment, then you will unwittingly and unconsciously end up treating your child in ways that will only fuel their tricky behavior, and it will get to that point. And I really felt for both that mother and that child, because you can only do as good as the tools as you have now. If you're learning these tools and you don't act on them, then you're personally responsible for not acting on them. You don't have anyone else to blame for the results you didn't get. You have yourself. But if you didn't have the tools at the time, and when my son was really little, I didn't know any of these things either. You know, if you can't act on what you don't know, then all you can do, and you've caused damage in the process because you were just naive and you didn't know any better, then you can turn it around. But it starts with being personally accountable and taking responsibility for it. You know, the more resentment, the more you try to push back, the more you're trying to win, you know, and that's really what it boils down to. She was trying to win this war with her son, and there was no war in the beginning. She created this in her mind because her insecurities were triggered. You know, if you're trying to win against your child, then you see your child as some kind of competition to win against, or some kind of foe to be dealt with immediately. Your child isn't your enemy. And if you set your child up in that way, then I tell you what, when they come a teenager, it's going to get really hard, just like this woman found out. You know, it depends on the child and their personality. It could be flight, it could be fight. Either way, it's not going to be pretty. So think about this today. If your child has said and done things that have triggered your insecurities, check yourself at the door. Help them to make comparisons in healthy ways. If your adult children are doing that, well, they're adults, you know, that's different. But if your teenage kids are doing it, try to understand why they're doing it. Are they doing it in spite because they're arguing with you, you know, and things like that? They're just, you know, especially teenagers, if you're having an argument with them and they're yelling at you and say, it's not fair because X and X, you know, let's say Jimmy next door gets to do this and Jimmy next door gets, you know, you could always, you know, don't let yourself get sucked into that emotional. They haven't developed their prefrontal cortex yet, but you have if you're over 25, especially 24, 25, that's when it's fully developed. Don't get sucked into all of that and then start railing back at them, because that's not going to help the situation. Someone in that situation has to be a leader and has to stop it. And that someone's going to be you, because there ain't no one else that's going to step in, right? So your child is not just going to suddenly and start acting all mature. You have to show them how to do it. And the buck stops with you. So if your child is trying to rope you into that, oh, they get to do this. And you can say, well, there are some things you get to do that they don't get to do either. And just refuse to get sucked into that and just leave it at that. Sometimes, especially with teenagers, you can say, you know what, I'm done with this conversation. I've said this is the way that it is. You know, you aren't allowed to stay up past 10 p.m. or whatever it is. And that's our house rules. And, you know, like it or leave it, but that's the way it is. And just stick to your guns. Stick to it. Stick to the natural consequences and be consistent. And I can't stress enough how being stoic is so important. Stoic is, you know, derived from stoicism, and it's, you know, it's an in-depth thing, but at its very basic level, what I mean by that is just standing your ground. You know, leadership, true, real, strong, authoritative leadership is when you've laid out the request, the consequences, you've helped the person that you're speaking to, your child, understand from that point of view why you're asking them to do this or why you're saying they can't do this, and that there are not natural consequences for not following through, and you just stick with it. You don't get sucked in to their emotional state. Have you ever seen two people argue and they're screaming back and forth, right? It just gets worse and worse until perhaps violence breaks out. But what about if there's one person screaming at the other person? They're yelling and they're carrying on. That person's just standing and they're just listening. They're just looking. They're not saying anything. I've been in that situation. And before I go in this podcast, I'll tell you a really quick little story of where this happened with another mother when my son was very young at school. And this is a really good explanation of how to check your emotions at the door and how to step up and be that leader in those volatile situations. You can use these methods too with your children and just in your everyday lives, especially at work and things like that too. So I was picking my son up from school. Can't remember how old he was. He was in like primary school, really young. And I went to talk to the teacher for a while about how he was doing and everything. And this other mother came up and just butted in and started yelling and screaming and saying, my child has lost his bag. It's been stolen from him. This is like, you know, the fourth time in a matter of a few months. And I'm sick of this, and started like going off and everything like that. It was really, really rude just coming up like that and started yelling and like making all demands and things like that. And so we had to obviously stop our conversation. And the teacher tried to speak to her, but she wouldn't have anything of it. She just kept yelling at the teacher. And then she started like threatening all these different things to come into the school and like burn it down. She literally said that. It was a little bit over the top. It was very, very over the top. Her child was right there standing, listening and experiencing all of this. And so was my child. My child got really, really scared. I could see that her son was really scared. And she was yelling so much, she actually attracted the attention of other teachers who were finishing up the day, and they started to come out to see what all the fuss was about. And so we had no choice but just to stand there and just wait until there was a break in her ranting, because it was like that. So we just stood there. Both of us were stoic. We didn't say anything. We just took it all in. We didn't really move. We just stood there with our arms by our side and listened. And then when she was done having her little say, I calmly said to her, "I'm really sorry that your son has lost his bag. Would you like me and my son to hunt around the school field with you? Because I understand that you're tired of looking for his bag. I understand that can be frustrating. Would you like some help with that?" Because I was kind, I was positive, I looked her direct in the eyes, I was very stoic, I didn't yell, no one rose to her level, and that triggered her because she wanted a fight, she was wanting a war of some kind. So she ended up screaming and yelling at me and saying, "Don't you know who I am? How dare you? You lord yourself over me, blah, blah, blah. Who do you think you are?" etc. And then I let her have her little rant again. And when there was a break, I said, "I understand that you are declining my help. I wish you all the best in finding your child's bag." And then I took my son and I walked away. That was it. That's how being stoic and checking your emotions. Now, how did I really feel inside? Because I tell you what, I looked really calm on the outside and I sounded calm, but I was not calm on the inside. She triggered a lot of insecurities within me. She triggered my anger really badly. She really triggered my anger terribly. And it was very difficult for me to keep my emotions in check, but I did it anyway. Because someone in that situation had to stand up and be a leader, and that person was going to be me. I wasn't going to match aggression with aggression, because that doesn't get anywhere good. I know how that would have gone. The police would have been called. So this is exactly how you deal with the same situations in your own home with your kids. If you match their aggression, if you match that same language, you're not going to fix anything. And I just ended it. That's it. I offered my help. You didn't want it. Okay, you lose out. Consequences. Here is my offer. Here are the benefits for accepting my offer. You decline my offer. You don't reap the benefits from me helping you. Okay, good luck to you. See you later. Bye. That's it. And I walked away and I felt good. I didn't feel angry or upset. I was able to calm myself down in a very short space of time. And I just went on with my day feeling great, you know. And the next day, her child came into class and actually apologized to my son on his mother's behalf. And that's so sad how a child of that age would have to apologize for their parents' behavior. So don't put your child in that position. Someone has to stand up. Someone has to be a leader. I understand feelings can be strong. Feelings can be volatile, but we have to grow up and stand up and put them in check. And that's how we teach our children to do it, because they will model your behavior. So when your children say things that trigger your insecurities, try to understand, then be understood. Try to understand the behavior. Are they just having a jab at you because they didn't get their own way? Well, you know, done. That's it. They don't get their own way. That's the consequence of it. Don't take it personally. Of course, if you have a teenager and they're calling you foul names and things like that, I have a chapter in my book, Disciplining Without Damage for Every Age, about abusive behavior and about oppositional defiance disorder as well, and all other kinds of behaviors too. So especially defiant behavior, I have a chapter based on that. So if you have found value from this, and if you're interested in learning how to discipline without damage using my cooperative no yelling, no screaming method that actually helps grow you as a leader in your home. I tell you what, when you start practicing this, you'll feel so much better when you're dealing with volatile situations. It, you know, instead of the emotional aspect of it derailing you for the rest of your day, and then you're snappy at everybody else because you got triggered earlier, you just put it aside. You compartmentalize it. That was that situation. I dealt with it. Next, It makes it so much easier to deal with. If that's you and you want to learn more, go to disciplinewithoutdamage.com, or you can find all of my parenting resources under the same banner at victoriousparenting.com, because I'm here to help you become victorious in your parenting so that your kids can thrive, so you can thrive, because healthy and strong families equal a healthy and strong society. So go ahead and check it out today, victoriousparenting.com, and become victorious in your parenting. And I'll speak to you in the next podcast episode.
I've written amazing parenting resource to help you boost positive self-esteem in your children called The Ultimate Guide to Promoting Positive Self-Esteem in Children. In this book, you will discover many strategies to boost positive self-esteem in your children, including the 7 key things that parents do that actually end up destroying self-esteem in their children. It's just $7 and you can get it at promotingselfesteem.com. That's promotingselfesteem.com.